Bailey Falter with a near no-hitter last night, and the Pirates have suddenly won four in a row. What does it mean? Does it mean anything? Does it matter? Let's talk to Dr. John Parato. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And Johnny is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. John, I guess we were talking about this at the beginning of the show. I guess my question is, do you think Bob Nutting is sitting there waiting on Derek Shelton? Do you think he has a win figure in mind? Do you think these final whatever how many games left matter to Shelton's future?
I think possibly. I think that Bob will probably let Ben Cherington make the call on Derek Shelton. Again, it's all speculation. Nutting hasn't really said anything team-related what his thoughts are since spring training, and neither he nor Travis Williams has addressed the situation with Cherington and Shelton if they think they're if they're going to be back next year or not. So just purely guessing, I don't know. I mean it's really hard to tell what Bob's thinking, but he's very conservative when it comes to making moves, when it comes to changing personnel, changing, especially with leadership. If you look at his other businesses, he is very, he has a lot of experienced people who's been working for him for many, many years. So I guess if I were to guess, and it's really a somewhat educated guess, is I don't think there's a number in mind. I think it's going to come down to what he said before the season back in spring training. Will they show improvement? And they are getting close to the 76 wins they had last year. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know if there's that win total in mind. I think it's more of a, are they making progress or not? And I do think these last 2.5 weeks matter at least somewhat. I mean, if they completely go back in the tank like they did in August, then they may have no choice but to make changes. But I think unless they really fall on their face here at the end, I think that both Cherington and Shelton will be back next year.
Would that be your move on both counts?
That's a tough one because – I mean, where they came from, where they started from back in 2020, they had to rebuild the organization, Cherington. Then you had the pandemic, which was a whole messy year, and it really didn't get anything accomplished. So that set them back a year, the pandemic. And I go back and forth on this, and I guess I think one more year, but I really think that they should be given one more year. It'll be a sixth year. But if they get off to a bad start or it's very clear early on in the season that no progress is being made, then I think you have to make a move.
John Parato joining us right now. You can watch him on 93.7thefan.com. You can see his smiling face. John, two guys that really concern me going into next season are Bednar and Key Brian Hayes. Derek Shelton telling me the other day that their surgery is off the table for Hayes. It's just a strength situation, working on his strength. That just didn't make sense to me after 2 years of these problems that would be their best answer. But I can see where those two guys are just going to be at spring training and they're just going to run it back with both of them. What do you think's going to happen? What should happen with Hayes and Bednar, two guys that a lot of people thought would be stars this season? Bednar has been one.
Yeah. Well, we'll take Hayes' case first. He's under contract for many years to come. So there's not a whole lot they can do there except hope he gets better. I mean, you can't force somebody to have surgery, and they keep saying that he doesn't need surgery, but yeah, I mean, you know how it is. We've all known people, whether they're athletes or non-athletes, who have back problems. And a lot of times, back problems are chronic. Unless you get something surgically done, they can last for a long, long time. And I mean, this has been going on for a long, this is over multiple years now with Key Brian Hayes, that he's just been unable to perform up to, you know, what the Pirates expect because of his back. And, you know, until something gets resolved there, I don't know what you do. I mean, you can't really bench him. He's making too much money, and he is a good defensive player even when he's hurt. So I think you just got to ride it out with him now, or, you know, or maybe you try to trade him and just get rid of the contract or something. It's a quandary the Pirates are in with Key Brian. Yeah. As far as Bednar, this is going to be fascinating on a lot of levels, what happens here in the off season. He's eligible for arbitration for a second time. He's going to start making some serious money this time around. And after the year he had this year, do you want to pay a reliever $4 or $5 million that you don't know you can count on? But then you factor in that he's a highly popular player with the fans. He's a local guy. The fans, at least into the last few weeks when they've kind of turned on him when he's gone bad. I mean, he's one of the most popular players on the team. And that's a sticky situation for the Pirates, because you just non-tender him and let him go and say, hey, we don't want to risk paying $4 or $5 million in arbitration. You know, those are two really tough situations that Ben Cherington has as a GM. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all turns out this winter. But at some point, there's got to be a resolution with Key Brian Hayes. I mean, you just, you know, either you – he has to do something to get back on the field. And if he can't, then the Pirates are going to have to think about moving on and getting in, you know, maybe we're playing Jared Triolo at third or going out and getting another third baseman.
John, regarding Bednar, is it reasonable to expect that maybe this is just a one-off, that he was an all-star the last couple of years, he was very good the season before that, maybe some work in the offseason, depending on what happens with Shelton, maybe a new pitching coach comes in. Do you think that maybe a reset and refresh spring training could change things in a full offseason, getting healthy coming into the year?
You know, I think that's certainly a possibility, Austin. I mean, I wouldn't pull the plug on David Bednar. I mean, you know, he had four good years here with the Pirates, three, I should say, until this year. And even this year at times, he had that one stretch for a couple of months where he ran off 19 saves in a row. Now, he wasn't as effective during that stretch as he was the last two seasons, but he was still pretty effective in those two or three months. I just have a hard time walking away from him after what he's done since the time he's been here, since coming over from San Diego in that trade. So, yeah, I personally would give him another shot, but I think I would not want to go to an arbitration hearing with him. I would want to come to a settlement at a certain number, and that would be it. And if he doesn't agree to that number, then you know, I would non-tender him. So, and I got to believe that he wants to stay here. He's a local guy. He professes his love for Pittsburgh at every turn. And I think they could work something out without having to go to a hearing.
I wanted to touch on one more thing with Shelton and Ben Cherington. If you were, put yourself in the shoes of Derek Shelton and Ben Cherington, and Bob Nutting asks, okay, why do you think that you should stay in your current position for 2025? If you were both of those guys, starting with Shelton, what would you say?
Well, if I were Shelton, I would say, you know, and I know it sounds like an excuse, but it's true. I would say for almost my entire tenure here as manager, I've been handed terrible rosters that can't win. I don't know any manager that could have won, especially his first three years. The pandemic year was just a disaster. And I mean, he was a new manager getting started, and the season gets delayed for, you know, almost 4 months. And then they only played 60 games. So that was like, it's almost like that season doesn't count. And then the next 2 years, they lost 100 games, but you look at the lineups. I mean, you know, we kind of complain now about some of the lineups they run out there, but compared to what they did in 2021 and 22, some of the lineups they put on the field, this team looks like the 27 Yankees compared to some of those teams in 21 and 22. So my argument, if I'm Derek Shelton, is, look, we did get better. We won 76 games this year, and I know we, you know, we fell apart in August, and that's, you know, and that's not good. But I would still say they're in a much better spot than they were when he took over. And I would even venture to say, because of Jones and Skeens and the way Falter has progressed and Luis Ortiz has progressed, you know, even though maybe they won't win as many games this year, I still think they're in a better spot than they were last year. Because you remember this time last year, they had two starting pitchers. They were using bullpen games and openers like 3 out of every 5 days. So I do think the foundation is there to succeed, but now the Pirates have to go out and support these pitchers. They need to get more offense, and they need to get a more consistent bullpen.
John Parrotto talking Pirates here. All right, Johnny, when we look at the rotation for next year, we know it's going to be, assuming they're all still here, and I'm can't believe that they wouldn't be, Keller, Skeens, and Jones will be your top three. Then it gets interesting with the likes of Bailey Falter almost through a no-hitter, Luis Ortiz, Bubba Chandler, somebody else from the minors or somebody else they bring in. How do you imagine those final two spots shake out?
And Oviedo will be back.
Oviedo, right.
Oviedo, who had a good year last year. Not an all-star type year, but certainly a good year for the Pirates. He should be back and healthy by the time spring comes along. And Thomas Harrington, who's at AAA, has been one of the fastest risers in all of baseball as far as prospects this year. He's really taken a leap forward. So I think the Pirates are going to have to at least consider, and I know it's hard to trade starting pitching, but with the depth they have, I think they're going to have to consider trading one of those guys for a hitter, because they're just too short of bats in their lineup. They just don't score consistently. When you look at some of the lineups, like Nick Gonzalez is a good player, but he shouldn't be hitting cleanup in the big leagues like he has a few times in the last few weeks. They need some more legitimate hitters, and I think the best way, obviously they're not going to go out in free agency and sign a big-name player. I think the best way for them to acquire bats is to trade from some of that starting pitching depth. And I know that you're always hesitant, and especially when you're a small market team who really can't afford top of the line pitching, you hate to trade any pitchers, but I think they're going to have to, because as the great Larry Doty, former Pirates general manager, once told me many, many years ago, you can't win a game nothing, Big John.
I like that.
I like that. John, talking about Johan Oviedo and the Tommy John surgery, you know, people have pointed out, I put out something yesterday of what I hypothetically would make the Pirates pitching would be and the rotation would be with Oviedo in it and maybe throwing in Bailey Falter as the final piece. And people like to say that Tommy John surgery, well, it's going to be hard for Oviedo to still be able to come back from that. I feel like we've reached a point with Tommy John surgery where, yes, you're out 12 months, maybe 14, but when you come back, you might be stronger than ever. Is that hard to think?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect him to bounce back. Like you said, it's the success rate of that surgery is really high now. And I mean, you still have the occasional outlier where somebody just isn't the same when they come back from it. But usually, I mean, especially in Oviedo's case, he's still in his mid to late 20s. I mean, if he were like at the very tail end of his career, I would say maybe, you know, I don't know how much he would have left. But I certainly think I have no question that Oviedo can come back strong and help the Pirates or help another team. But probably if other teams want to trade for him, they would want to at least see him pitch in spring training. I don't know if they would want to take him in a trade without at least putting their eyes on him post-surgery to see what they think as far as what condition he's in.
John, switching topics, we were talking about Ohtani earlier, and I think he now has 47 home runs, 48 stolen bases, could be the first 50-50 guy in history, which obviously includes Willie Mays and Barry Bonds and Mickey Mantle and everybody else who's ever lived. What do you make of that accomplishment, 50-50?
I think it's a remarkable accomplishment. I mean, to be able to have that much power and that kind of speed, and this is a guy who's a top-of-the-line pitcher, too. He isn't even pitching this year because he had Tommy John surgery last year. I think we've almost gotten used to it so much that maybe you start to take for granted how great this guy is. But, I mean, a 50-50 season would be amazing. And, you know, you look at Ohtani, and he's a big guy. That's the one thing that surprised me the first time I saw him in person, is he's bigger than I thought he was, but yet he's so fast. And I don't think people really understood, I'll put myself in there, just how fast the guy was into this year when he was concentrating solely on hitting, and he didn't have to preserve himself on the bases to try not to beat up his body too much. And I mean, what can't this guy do? I mean, you know, it's just remarkable what he's done, and I'm kind of out of words to explain it. I know when I talked to the guys on the Dodgers this year when they came to town, I guess it was back in June, and they were saying the same thing. I was talking to Mookie Betts about it. Mookie goes, I don't know what more to say. He said, the guy, just when I think he can't be any better, he can't get any greater, he does. And, I think that's going to be a great accomplishment. And what a remarkable player he is.
John, we appreciate the time, man. John Parrotto from Pittsburgh Now. Pittsburgh Sports Now? Is that where they can
Pittsburgh
find your stuff?
Baseball Now.
Pittsburgh Baseball Now. That's where
Not
you can
Pittsburgh
find.
Pittsburgh Baseball Later. Pittsburgh Baseball Now.
Well, it always seems like Pittsburgh baseball is later, but hopefully at some point now will arrive.
Maybe we should change the name.
Thank you, Johnny.
You're welcome, Joe. Thanks for having me. Take care of that voice, buddy.
Thank you. What a nice man he is, huh, Limits? I mentioned going into the break that Arthur Smith had a reason for literally never throwing the ball to the middle of the field. He said it was out of respect for their playmaking safety out there, Jesse Bates. Just tried to neutralize him, which I thought we did, R.D. Smith said. That's what it came down to, turnovers. Our game wrecker wrecked the game. Theirs didn't. That's kind of hard for me to argue, Limits.
It's not hard to argue at all.
I mean, you can't give that kind of respect to every player. You can't just say we won't throw to the middle of the field all day because of one guy.
But do like teams do that against Minka Fitzpatrick? But they still throw over the middle against the Steelers?
Yeah, you can't do that every week. But for that game, that day, that makes sense, and it was a winning formula. Okay, let's bring on Jerry DePaula. Good morning, Jerry. We haven't talked in a while. How are you?
Joe, it's good to hear your voice. How are you, buddy?
I've never been better, and I value your inquiry. You're on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline. Jerry, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You're also a wonderful man, which everybody knows. 50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. All right, Jerry, we got the backyard brawl. We've covered a couple of these together. This feels like a big deal for both teams, obviously. But I'm thinking on Pitt's side, man, if they win this, they then have a real chance to go 4-0 for the first time since 2000, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think that it'll be a big game for Pitt because they can get a good start to their season, because later on in October, November, they got tougher games. They've got North Carolina on the road, SMU on the road. They got to play Clemson. The schedule gets more difficult. But also, a victory by Pitt on Saturday would erase the stink from that 17-6 game last year. A total embarrassment when you're playing your rival, you know, a team you've been playing for over 100 times, going back into the 1800s, and they're a rival, and you hate them. It's actually hate. And you didn't even show up. I mean, didn't score a touchdown. Phil Jakovic threw three interceptions. I don't think they want to pile on to that stink with more stink this year. So I think it's a big game for Pitt probably just as big for West Virginia because they have high aspirations this year too. But, you know, Pitt really needs this win in order to get the relevancy back around the nation that they lost last year.
Jerry, Eli Holstein, he looks so poised and confident in the pocket. He did not in the first half against Cincinnati, but in the second half looked like a completely different player, looked like the guy that we saw week one for Pitt against Kent State. How have you seen him grow and develop through camp into the player that he's become throughout the first couple of weeks as just a redshirt freshman?
Well, that's one of the things you hear every time you talk to either Narduzzi or Kate Bell or one of his coaches or his teammates is the poise and the calm this guy has. One thing that Cade Bell told us yesterday was he just knows his way around the pocket. I mean, he can maybe get rid of the ball quickly where a lot of quarterbacks hang on to the ball. He can run with it a little bit, scramble out of the way, slide to the left to the right to make a throwing lane for himself. And Cade Bell said that makes it easier on him as a play caller because he can do a lot of things because if things go wrong, you know, Cade knows how to get out of it. Now, he's only a redshirt freshman. He's going to meet much tougher defenses than he met at against Kent State and against Cincinnati. So let's not give him the Heisman Trophy yet, but I think this guy has a future here at Pitt, and I think he's a smart guy. I talked to his high school coach, and he said he knew him from a sophomore in high school. This kid was going to be special because he just the kind of guy that grabs his teammates and says, let's go throw the football. This summer he did that at Pitt. He did it over the winter in the indoor facility, getting his guys together, and that was when he was, you know, supposedly, quote-unquote, the backup quarterback. But he played so well in training camp that Narduzzi had no choice but to make him the starting quarterback.
Yeah, looking back on it now, how much of a competition was it? And what do you think the shift was from Yarnell to Holstein compared to what Narduzzi said before camp?
Well, before camp, Narduzzi was assuming that, you know, Yarnell was going to be the quarterback because he had the experience. But he only had experience of three starts. I like Nate Yarnell, and I think he's going to be a good quarterback. But it's not like, you know, Holstein was competing against Johnny Unitas. I really believe that Holstein just played better than Yarnell did. He has more of an upside. He's maybe a little bit younger. He's still not even 20. He's barely 20 years old. So there's a lot of upside here, a lot of potential. I think they saw that. And Kate Bell came in as the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. He really didn't know either quarterback, Yarnell or Holstein. So they're all starting from ground zero. And, you know, Holstein just made a better impression on Yarnell, on Bell, and then all of a sudden, here he is starting now in the biggest game of the season coming up on Saturday.
Jerry DePaula of the Trib on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. So, Jerry, I see the game is sold out. Does it have a chance to break the game from a couple of years ago as the biggest sporting event in Pittsburgh history here?
I think it has a real chance. It was a touch over 70,000 2 years ago. It'll probably be around that this year. It's going to be a nice day, good weather. You know, one thing they don't have going for it, Joe, and you can appreciate this, there is no Rib Fest. I know the Rib Fest is one of your favorite events of the year.
Yes.
That's right. But I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be close to 71,000, I'm sure. There'll be people standing in the aisles, sitting in the aisles, and you get there early. You know, I'm going to try and leave my house maybe 4 or 5 hours before the game so I can, you know, make sure beat the traffic and beat the tailgaters and get myself ready to go. This is a big game, not only for the players, but for the guys like me that want to do a good job and write a good story.
Jerry, Dez Reed at running back. I mean, how did nobody find this guy from Western Carolina? What, do you have 100 receiving yards and 100 rushing yards? Nobody's done that before for Pitt.
Right.
I mean, he's explosive. He's only 5'8", but do you know how Pitt found this guy? And he is one of the most explosive players, I think, in the entire ACC.
Well, they find this guy because Cade Bell coached him the last 2 years at Western Carolina. And when Cade Bell got hired, Reed had actually already been in the portal for a couple of weeks. And he was talking to some teams. And he was getting ready to commit to some teams, to at least one other team that he didn't want to name. And so if Cade Bell wasn't hired here at Pitt, if Pat Narduzzi had kept the same offensive staff as he had last season, Desmond Reed wouldn't be here. He'd be somewhere else. But, you know, Cade Bell knew him. He recruited him as a sophomore in high school down in Florida. And one of the things that Des Reed said early on, he says, once he found out that Cade Bell was going to be the offense coordinator at Pitt, it was a no-brainer for him to come to Pitt. And they're using him in the correct way, you know, using him out of the backfield, which you know, really, that touchdown pass, a 56-yard catch and run against Cincinnati was a backbreaker, you know, really the key to that game. And he just runs away from people. And he's only 5'8". He reminds some people of Deuce Vaughn, the little running back from Kansas State that now plays for the Cowboys, I believe. This guy has a future in the NFL for sure, even though he is 5'8". And they claim, you know, pound for pound, he's the toughest guy on the team. And so he's also very strong. He has a big upper body. He just isn't very tall. But with that kind of speed, you're going to use him a lot. The thing is, you don't want to wear him out. You know, he's only 5'8", 175, and there's, you know, a possibility if you use him too much, and he's getting like 25 touches a game, you use him too much, you know, you by the end of the season, who knows what's going to happen to the poor guy. But I think they'll probably take him out of punt returns now because they need him too much on scrimmage plays.
Fan will broadcast live from Mineo's in Allison Park tonight, 6 to 7 p.m. for the Landon Roberts Show. Landon will be live talking black and gold football, whatever else is on his mind, presented by Jim Shorkey Chevrolet. Jerry, big week of news over at Pitt with the firing of Heather Like. What do you think the time frame is for her getting her replacement in there? And any interesting names come to mind?
You know, I was talking to some people about that yesterday. I think it might be maybe even before the end of the football season, maybe not tomorrow, but I think at some point, you know, before we get into the calendar year 2025, that Joan Gable's going to have somebody in mind. She probably has, you know, two or three people in mind already. I'm sure she does. That she may even start interviewing some people. There's a guy who works in the Oklahoma Athletic Department by the name of Marcus Bowman, who is a basketball player here at Pitt and has been around the Pitt program, athletic program, for a long time. I think he may get an interview. I don't know that for sure yet, but I think he's one name. You know, and I'll beat the drum for Pat Bostic because he's a smart guy, loyal to the university. You wouldn't have to ever worry about him leaving. He'd be here forever. And I think he has a future in that kind of position, whether it's a Pitt or somewhere else. I would put my hat in the ring for Pat Boston. It was up to me, and maybe Joan Gable. Hopefully she knows the same thing.
That's a pretty fascinating thing with our guy Pat Boston. Defensively, Jerry, Donovan McMillan, obviously one of the keys in the secondary. How do you feel that the linebackers and defensive linemen, a lot of new guys, a lot of new players that are shuffled in with transfers and whatnot, how do you think they've looked throughout the first couple of weeks? It's a big test against the West Virginia team that wants to establish the run early.
Well, you know, these linebackers are young, but one adjective I use to describe these young linebackers, guys like Kyle Lewis and Raven Lovelace from Leechburg, is vicious. You know, when they go into their meeting rooms and they look at videos, this summer they're looking at videos of wildlife, you know, beaten up on other wildlife in the wild. And one of the things they talk about is eating face. And they had a video of a zebra getting his face eaten off by a coyote. And that's the kind of mindset these guys have to go in and just be vicious and be aggressive and to make plays. They're young, and they're going to be going in the wrong directions from time to time. And that's going to happen against some good teams. But there's a lot to be said for those linebackers, especially with Brandon George, a veteran of 6 years here at Pitt, in the middle calling the signals to keep them sort of grounded. It's going to be very important to stop the run because that's what West Virginia does best is run the ball. I think Pitt has a good chance to do that and maybe win a close game.
Jerry, appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, Joe. Good talking to you.
See you, buddy. That's Jerry DePaula from the Trib, been covering that Pitt football program for a good long time. All right, are you going to the game Saturday?
No, I wanted to go badly, but I'll be announcing a game at Allegheny at 1 o'clock. If it was a 7 o'clock game, I would have rushed back and been there in time, but I'm going to have to catch it on the radio.
Well, I thought it might be a nice treat to listen to Arthur Smith right here. I haven't heard a whole lot of Arthur Smith about this game. Do we have his back and forth with the media today?
We have all of Artie.
Let's hear it. Thank you, Limit.
What impressed you about Justin Westbrook?
Well, really, you know, the way he handled the week, right? And you get a sudden change, middle, late in the week, however you look at it. And really, for us, going into week one, I mean, you see around the league, you know, after that first drive, I thought we settled down. We took care of the football because you see it all over the league week one. Turnovers, that doesn't change in any game. I thought he operated the plan really efficiently. What fired me up is situational football. The end of the half, you know, things you work on, handling that situation, be able to get points on the board, flip the momentum a little bit going into half. And really at the end of the game, we had 6 out of 10 drives. We had scoring. Now, we want touchdowns, clearly. Like, that's not celebrating field goals, but the efficiency of that. And then based on that, so we had six scoring drive, two of them really situational football, because that one late in the game, you don't want to get greedy and you kind of concede it. Once he converted on that quarterback counter, that thing was over. We just bled the clock down. You know they're going to have to do something standard NFL 101, the zero. We didn't need to pick the ball up, although there was part of me that wanted to. But the game was over. You know, that's how you lose the games. You know, and they bring the full team meeting in there and you get a tip, you know, something like that. So game was basically over. So I thought those situations in the half in the game he handled really well, plus the plan. You know, the way I looked at it, maybe it's because I coached Jesse and I got so much respect for Jesse Bates, but that guy is a game wrecker. And just trying to neutralize him, which I thought we did, and that's what it came down to, the turnovers. Our game record wrecked the game. Theirs didn't. And so overall, I just thought just that. As a still young quarterback in this league, new environment, week one, sudden change late, I thought he handled that really well.
How much does it help you and him this week that it seems like there will maybe be a decision about the starter earlier in the week than there was last week? You said it was a late change this week.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's, you always have to have contingency plans. You know, as longer you're in this thing, I mean, I've done it where you lose a guy on Saturday, Sunday. It's part of our jobs. You know, you always have the contingency. Then when it hits you, you know, you got to implement it. And certainly, especially that position, makes it easier. But it's the same issue with Kyle. Like, if Russ can't go, and Kyle's your two, he's got to be ready too. He's always a snap away. So you just, as a coach, you don't ever want to take that for granted. Same thing with the guy that may be your fourth ride out. Who knows what happens on Sunday, and the guy's got to play a bigger role. And that's, you know, you say that as a coach, you never know, but when he has to get implemented, it's real. It shouldn't come down to that, but that's part of the building process as well.
What do you see from your offensive line? Obviously, you guys were able to run the ball pretty effectively, but definitely a lot of younger guys. What did you see from them, and where they can possibly take another step?
Yeah, it's always. We're always a work in progress. The best teams, you know, obviously you want to grow as you're stacking wins and the improvement, but we want to be playing our best football going into the postseason, and that's what the good teams do historically year after year. You're always a work in progress. For those guys, really, you know, two and a half rookies, however you want to categorize Broderick, young lineman, especially the new center on a road against a veteran defense. Somebody asked me the question, how do you protect them? You know, you don't want to give them any strategy. We wanted to control the line of scrimmage. It was a little blunt force trauma, made it ugly. It was pretty at times, depending on your perspective. And I thought as the game wore on, I mean, we were able to possess the ball, I think, 36 minutes, believe 11 in the fourth quarter. You know, the one thing that, you know, I wish we had handled that long drive we had, we really could have gone for the kill shot there, and credit to them. You know, they out-executed us on third and two and fourth and one, but that took a lot of clock, and we were rolling them off the ball. So, you know, as a coach, maybe I'm sick in the head, but that was beautiful to me.
What kind of trust did on the fourth down?
Well, it was really the play before that, and that's what you're talking about. This game comes down to details. And this isn't taken any away because I got so much respect for the guys on the side, and Jesse and AJ, you know, they one-upped you, which we anticipated. They had shown in the preseason. So we're in 11. They go base. They brought the double backers, you know, whatever you want to look at, double backer blast right in there. So you build in, so we run alert. So Justin sees it. You've got what you wanted. The problem is it's such a small margin. And this is, I don't want to sound like I'm taking anything in Atlanta, but where that ball was caught and the timing of that, that's the stuff you got to clean up week to week. If you want to be a great offense, it's the small details. That play, you're looking on TV or from a common, you know, guy in the bar, it looks like bad. And I said, I'm not taking anything in Atlanta, but you got to give yourself a better chance. You catch a thing earlier, you got better angles on that block, and you're one-on-one open field tackling with a guy 8 yards off, and we'll see what happens. So they out executed us there, the fourth and one. Lamon did his best Troy Polamalu. And so there's things you look at. You know, we hit him on a couple sneaks. This one was different. We went hurry up, and they made a play. So there's a lot of things as you go through it. They did. You know, we had the long drive, and credit to them. They bowed up on third and two. We got to be more detailed. And then the fourth and one. You know, as a coach, you're always going to have calls you want back. But, again, we were able to grind them out, and thankfully Boz kicked a bunch in there, and we didn't turn the ball over and came away with a week one win.
I might also say Austin's blocking for Jefferson. Shouldn't that be the other way around, given the size of the two players?
On what one?
On the third down, you had Calvin Austin blocking for Van Jefferson.
Well, we're also – there's a package. Again, hindsight, that block never should affect that play if it's executed right. So, again, as I just said, you look at it, Yeah, credit to AJ and Jesse, but that ball never should go out there. So if he doesn't lose inside, that's irrelevant. That block's irrelevant. The problem is we caught that ball in the numbers right into him. So that's come about timing and details. So, again, however you look at it, yeah, you can go big. We could put Skoranek in there. You could flip it around. Now, all of a sudden, you get form tackled and a 180-pound guy. It's a different story. So there are a lot of ways to look at it. And you're talking about building plays off packages. That was a huge package we had used. You got the zero alert, but the ball never should have gone out there. So that makes kind of that irrelevant. But, yeah, when you're late with it, it does. Now it looks like a bad matchup. So, you know, obviously, if we're going to throw it that far out there, you're going to want Darnell, Prue, Naj, right? He can block him and certainly show that on the sideline. But that goes back to details and execution. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Stayed away from the middle of the field. Was that scheme-wise, or would you like?
That was my respect to Jesse Bates.
Is that what that was?
Again, don't let their best player wreck the game. We had a couple other things for Jesse. He even texted me. Like I said, I don't know why more people don't know about him, but you know he's arguably one of the top players in the league, and he wrecked week one. If you watch week one last year, he damn near won it by himself. Two picks, almost got a third, fumble, forced fumble late. And the way the game was going, you know, we were able to stay ahead, and it allowed us to not try to let him affect it. He texted me, he said, "You caught me sleeping right before the half." I said, "Yeah, you lull you to sleep. Get disinterested, and we set him up on that situationally, but he's a great player. You know, sometimes it's just very practical. You know, our Jason Bourne, T.J. Watt, wrecked the game. Theirs didn't. And that's kind of what the story of the game really was.
You have to take a similar approach.
I like this guy. Do you?
Yeah, I'm starting to like him. Our Jason Bourne wrecked the game and theirs
great.
Didn't. That's a great line.
He goes to great lengths to say what his version of a play is. I think you're in a no-win situation when you're an offensive coordinator sometimes at these sessions because, for instance, that quick throw to the receiver where I think it was Van Jefferson with Calvin Austin and Pickens maybe out in front blocking. Was that it?
I think it was the play they lost like 10 yards.
Well, it wasn't a good play. I know that. But he's explaining to you it wasn't executed properly, and here's why. Here's exactly how. And then people will jump on him and say he's throwing people under the bus. I want the explanation. I want his point of view as to why that play didn't work and for him to be honest. And then we can talk about it, you know? I really like the way that he handles himself in these sessions. The thing with Matt Canada, right away that you noticed was he was extremely, extremely defensive. And that makes you wonder, is he secure in what he's doing? This guy sounds very secure in what he's doing. You know, let's see how it pans out for sure. But he comes off as likable for whatever that's worth and not worth. He comes off as likable, doesn't he?
He does. And, I mean, it's obviously something that you need with an offensive coordinator that you want him to tell it how it is. It doesn't happen a lot. But it seems like he's honest with the players. And he's honest with the media. And I think one sign of being this honest with the media is that he is, in fact, honest with his guys. And these are probably some of the conversations that are being had. And, I mean, the Jesse Bates effect that he talked about, I don't know if previous offensive coordinators would bring that up a little bit on the Steelers. Now, is that doesn't qualify anything of what Arthur Smith is doing in terms of play calling. It's good to hear him say it. But at the same time, maybe it's a reason more than an excuse that they didn't use the middle of the field. And we'd like to see how that changes in Denver.
Yeah, and the fact that Bates texted him, I found very
interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
Just to bust his chops a little bit.